Please be to order. We have a quorum. We're ready to begin this meeting. We'll postpone a couple of agenda items until we have some more people here that we're waiting for. So we will begin this meeting of the Inland Ports Authority Infrastructure Committee. We welcome those in attendance here in the Capitol and those who are with us online. Thanks for your attendance and your participation. Our agenda today does include the swearing in of a new committee member. We'll postpone those until later. And we'll instead go to item 4, which is consideration of loan applications. We have 3 applicants with 4 loans, and we have all the presentations from the Port Authority Board staff on those applications. We'll take a look at them one at a time. Board members, just so you're aware, I have asked the staff to address a few standard questions. I have asked staff to address some standard questions for each one of the applicants to help us do our review. So the questions I've asked them to look at are, and there's probably about 10 or 11 of them, just so you're aware, and rather than repeat them all for each applicant, I thought I'd just say them all now and then let them address them as I give that presentation. First is, what objective criteria were used to select the applicants from other applicants that may have applied and wish to have these low-interest loans? Next question is, tell us about the applicant's credit history, ability to repay the loan, management ability, business experience, ability to leverage public and private funds, and collateral that they may have to back up the loan repayment. Next question, what recourse does the authority or the state have if the applicant is unable to repay the loan? Next question is the collateral sufficient to make the authority whole if the applicant is unable to meet the repayment obligation? Next is, describe the public impact and the public benefits, including the impact on the community and the impact on job creation. Next question, does the Inland Port Authority or any state entity get any ownership rights or other guaranteed public benefit from these loans? Would this loan likely not occur in the current market, or if it did occur, would it have a different scale or terms or not be as timely? Next question is, how will this loan contribute to sustainability on market transformation in Utah? Next, are there any crime issues relating to the business of the, or the location? Next, are there any economic ties or other conflicts of interest between this applicant and any member of the Inland Port Authority Board or Authority staff? And finally, please describe the environmental review done for the associated project areas. So that's a lot. I recognize that, and I appreciate the research that Inland Port Authority Board has, or staff members have done. So let's just go in the same order that is on the agenda. And so the first applicant on the agenda is Savage for the project in Cedar City, otherwise known as the Iron Springs project area. So Ben, let's go to you. And then when Ben is done presenting, or even while he's presenting, board members, please feel free to ask any questions. And then if we have any questions for Savage's staff, we'll jump into those as well. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We do have representatives from Spanish Fork City as well as Zenith online if there's questions for them as we get to those applications as well. So just wanted to give a brief overview of the loan committee's authority. So it's set forth in Utah code, in our code 1158, 106, as well as 63A-3-4. So the loan committee may recommend for board approval an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port Fund to a borrower for an infrastructure project undertaken by the borrower. An infrastructure project, as defined in our statute, includes an inland port, intermodal facilities, which is what Savage is here for, as well as other public infrastructure improvements, such as sewer, electricity, roads, water systems, and the like that are more applicable to the second two. Statute also specifies that an infrastructure loan shall bear interest rate at a rate not to exceed 0.5% above bond market interest rates available to the state, and the loans are serviced by the Division of Finance. So appreciate Jonathan's spot on the board and great partner in getting those together, and obviously a bunch of experts up here alongside me, Treasurer's Office. We utilize their expertise in the bond interest rates and lots of other things. So appreciate your membership on the committee. Savage Transload Network is the applicant for our first two loans. The first one is a Tooele County transload expansion. So they have an existing facility in Tooele County where they transload, which is moving goods from truck to rail and rail to truck. So the facility's at capacity. They'd like to expand that. To this, they've asked for a $2.4 million loan over 10 years. And based on those bond interest rates, we'd be looking at 3.04% for that. The use of funds would be for the expansion, including one rail to truck or truck to rail transload track, which will double the existing capacity, along with one conveyor and three transload racks. The repayment source for this loan would be company funds, including new revenue that they would get from this facility. The company has been a long time business, started here in Utah in 1946. What we do I want to get to all of your questions, Mr. Chair, just a little bit of background on our underwriting process. We like to do a Dun & Bradstreet report for all our applicants, which is kind of like a business credit report. We did that for Savage. It shows strong likelihood of continued viability, on-time payments, and so everything that we want to see in terms of that. So I'm going to talk about Iron County transload really quickly, and then I'll get into the rest of the questions that you had asked. So loan terms are for this one, $5 million loan, which would pay for about three quarters of the facility for 10 years at 3.04% interest again. This would be for four rail to truck transload tracks with approximately 100 rail car spots, switching lead track, which will allow the railport to sort cars delivered by Union Pacific, 15 acres of unimproved property, including 2 acres of dimensional product laydown area. Again, the repayment source is company funds, including new revenue from the facility. And the statute allows us to use differential. So this is more commonly referred to as tax increment, but it allows us to use that tax differential, the increase in property taxes from an area, an inland port project area, to repay the funds kind of as a backstop. So again, we're expecting these payments from the company or from the city in Spanish Fork's case directly. However, if there was a default, we would be able to collect that money from the differential in the project area. So the Iron County is within a project area. It serves our Iron Springs project area that was our first outside of the Wasatch Front to be approved. The Tooele County one that I talked with first is outside of a project area, but actually serves two of our newer project areas that were adopted last fall. Our Tooele Valley project area and our 20 Wells project area. So we think it's very beneficial to both those areas. And so although it's outside of the project area, we feel it's a very good use of funds. Mr. Chair, to the questions you asked, how was this applicant selected? One of the directives we got from our board was we wanted to support rail and especially rail outside of the Wasatch Front. So to that end, this was a really ideal project for us. One of our stated goals has been to get trucks off the road. And this transload is exactly the type of project that we feel enables that sort of thing to happen. This is, as I mentioned, a long running, very good company that has been in business for a long time. We work with them all across the state outside of loans, and a really good partner to us and someone that we're very comfortable with.
May I ask a follow-up question?
So, yes, Kurt, Mr. Slaw.
Thank you. Kurt Slaw, so I'm on the board of the treasurer's office. My question is, were there any other applicants who could have performed some of the same infrastructure development who also approached the Port Authority but were denied access to the loan?
There were not. So we gave the only other loan that this board has, or the committee has recommended, which ended up getting a loan, was for another transload facility in Iron Springs. What they're doing is they're bringing in these big steel beams. BCI Steel is a steel company. And so they're bringing in large items like that. Savage's expertise is more in the bulk products. So a different segment of the market that they're going to get at. So when we've had an applicant that wants to do rail, especially rail in rural Utah, we've jumped at the chance. So this is, again, the the three times that we have got an application like this, we have brought them to you. There have been lots of applicants that have wanted money for other infrastructure that we have turned away, but none that have asked for specifically rail infrastructure, especially a facility like this.
Follow up, call it, but questions for me, just to fully understand the program and things like that. So when companies apply, how do they get the information to apply? Is it something that the Inland Port kind of goes around and says, hey, we've got this available? Or how do they get to know that this type of program is available?
That's a good question. I think when there's really cheap money available, word tends to get out. So certainly this is a tool in our toolkit that we have let project areas know about. And as they're working with rail operators or other companies in the area, our business development team often is in talks and brings that up. The community itself, the local government that we're working with, definitely knows about it. So they'll often share that information as well. Yeah. So, our executive director, Ben Harsh, just, also adding that, you know, being in a project area is kind of the catalyst for these loans, and being in the project areas or benefiting a project area is something that is required of all these applicants.
Mr. Evans?
Yeah, that was, Duncan Evans, board member. I just going to say, looking at the definitions of the projects, it does allow for outside the project. One thing I think we should make sure, like I know like last time when we approved loans, we made sure like our approval, like motion or like official written document outlined like terms and everything like this. I think in this case, the statute says if it's outside of the, like outside of a project area, this board has to determine that the public infrastructure improvements are to benefit the project area. And so I think we should be very, like, very specific that we say, like, in addition to approving this loan, we should make sure that we're clear that we say, this project, like, benefits the following project areas so that it's clear that there's that tie there to those areas. Cause it says we have to, like, certify that.
I'm okay with that. I wondered if that referred to us or the IPA board itself.
Okay.
But regardless, it's probably a good idea for us to make sure we're covering that area.
Yeah, it just says it just says loan approval body. So we'll have to see if that's referring to us or someone else. But it should, I think, just to make sure we're covered that we're in agreement that
I'm fine with that.
We understand like what those benefits are and which project areas we're benefiting.
Yes. Sounds good.
Great. Thank you. I'll continue. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In terms of the applicant's credit history, I kind of talked about that. The ability to repay the loan, we see as extremely likely. Again, we did get the last 3 years of financial statements from the company. That is protected information, but it's something that we analyze as a board, certainly shared with the loan committee members. So we feel they're in a very strong financial position. The income from the facilities alone, the additional income they'll receive, will within a couple of years be enough to pay for the loan payments themselves. So, we think it's a really good investment, high confidence in the management ability and the business experience. Again, the collateral we do have for the Iron Springs loan as it is within a project area. And so the differential could be used to repay that, which again is the recourse if the authority has, again, this is an official loan that we work with the Division of Finance to put together a loan for the applicant. So, you know, if they miss a payment, there's interest and late fees associated with that. And, we would be able to, if we couldn't collect, use the differential to repay.
Ben, am I correct? I remember reading, I believe that if a project is not inside a project area, then tax differential cannot be used as collateral.
That is correct. Yeah. So the $2.4 million for the Twilla County expansion would not be.
In that case, we're using money, basically the companies.
Exactly. And that, again, that's the primary repayment source. Right. We would only go to differential if there was a default of some sort.
And Ben, maybe I'll just add to that as well. The nexus, and Duncan, you are absolutely correct, as usual. But there is a nexus that our board really prefers to see between these project areas, not just on the tax increment and differential, but really the nexus of what these project areas are all about. How do we optimize them logistically? And Kurt, I think this also goes to your point as well. Not just logistically, but also economically. So we're looking for that really strong nexus. We want to create these regional areas of strength, economic strength. And I think we feel like these two things go together. So I think we would be very, very remiss, reluctant, and probably would not bring forward an application unless there were a direct tie to our project areas. Because in that project area plan and budget is where we've done the public benefit aware or analysis and some of these other more thorough reviews. So tying this to that is just, it keeps us safe in a number of regards.
Thank you. The public impact or benefit, impact on the community. Again, one of our key goals is to take trucks off the road, reduce congestion and emissions. The job creation at the facilities themselves are not overly large, but it does help with our Inland Port project areas and makes it more attractive to companies and specifically the type of companies with good, high quality manufacturing jobs. Again, we're trying to get away from the job that's a distribution fulfillment center job and get into advanced manufacturing and get those type of companies that are going to invest in the community and provide those high paying jobs. You know, it's interesting when you look at Tooele County specifically, the number of people that are going, to Salt Lake for work every day. The more we can provide jobs in the county itself and reduce that, we think is a benefit to the environment, benefit to, the employees that would work out there, if they can work close to home. In terms of Iron County, before we opened up the transload facility at BCI, every single one of their steel shipments was on a train to the Northwest Quadrant of Salt Lake City, where a truck would come, pick it up, and drive it back down to Cedar City. So by putting that facility there, every single time they get a load of steel, it's offloaded directly in Cedar City, so it doesn't have to come up to the Northwest Quadrant. It's reducing that congestion, reducing that pollution that everyone is so worried about, including the Inland Port Authority. And the, really a success story already in that facility, and we want to see more of that throughout the state. We do not get any ownership rights. However, the funds, again, this will be specified in the contract, must be used for the rail facilities that are open to the public. Any shipper can use them. That's obviously the goal of the transload facility is to get lots of people using it. So that is the benefit that we are after in terms of a logistics operation in the state of Utah.
Would they pay a fee to Savage to use them?
They would, yeah.
Mr. Slott.
So how is the board assured that access, since that's part of the public benefit, it's going to be at a rate that is kind of justifiable and reasonable, right? So if I'm Savage and I have to meet that provision, but I really don't want people to use my infrastructure, then they can set a rate at an unreasonable level that nobody would want to use. So what's the mechanism that we're assured that the access is actually available at reasonable level?
Yeah, certainly to get that revenue, they've got to compete with the trucking sector. So most goods in Utah are going on a truck right now. Without these rail access points, a truck is the cheapest way to do it. So for Savage to be competitive in the market, they've got to be at rates that are competitive with trucking, which is the alternative right now.
Okay, but are there others that could use the rail lines other than Savage then to do the same thing? And if so, how does Savage recoup their infrastructure development costs?
The rail lines, yes. I mean, that's Union Pacific's ultimately going to be taking it. But okay. But to get on and off the track of the transport facility is the Savage business model.
That's proprietary owned by Savage.
And, yeah.
And while there's access for people using their transloading service, there's no way to essentially operate a competing transloading operation there.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Which again was the issue with with Iron County and BCI, and there's nowhere to get on off the rail. The rail went right by their facility, but there's no way to get on or off until that facility was built. In terms of the ability of this loan to occur in the market, you know, it's interesting. We had a really good call with Savage a week or two ago, and again, they're a national company. There's lots of places they can invest capital, and in order to ensure that this happens in Utah, you know, this is a way we can help ensure that the capital is coming to Utah. We get these needed facilities here. So would it happen? Maybe in Utah. Maybe it happens many years down the road. So this is a way, by providing this incentive, we can help ensure that the investment happens in Utah and we get these facilities that, again, we feel are crucially important to the state and the logistics operations in the state. How the loan contribute to sustainability. Again, additional rail access throughout the state, reducing dependence on trucks, and especially trucks in the Northwest quadrant of Salt Lake City. Other crime issues related to the business location. And this is a quote from the company. We have to keep a tight lid on the products. We move from a security perspective, so we have a vested interest in moving things quietly and securely. So, again, no crime issues related to these locations. There are no economic ties or conflicts of interest with this applicant and any member of the Inland Port Board Authority or staff. And then the last question on environmental. Again, TWIL is a serious non-attainment area. We do an environmental assessment for all of our project areas. Again, the Twilla County project areas, Iron County project area, all have a full environmental assessment that's included in our project area plan and budget. I certainly think that air quality issues are the big ones for Twilla County. There are some wetlands in the Twilla Valley project area that, again, some of the differential will go towards protecting and enhancing that as required in any project area that has wetlands there.
John, please.
Jonathan Ellis, board member. So I just wanted to know, with like the loan we did last year with BZI, there was a deferral in repayment. Is that an intention here, or because it's going to be repaid with profits, that it would be just repaid as a normal loan?
Yeah, these would be repaid as normal loans. So first payment would be due 12 months from execution.
Okay.
Annual payments.
Annual.
Okay. Yeah, but no deferral.
Thank you.
And that would be regardless of whether or not the facilities are currently operating and revenues being received from the facilities. So
correct.
So Savage would be paying back general company funds.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Another general question, so I can properly understand. Are companies who apply for this program, are they required, or at least is it strongly recommended that they have additional sources of funding to go along with the loan?
To repay the loan, or
not necessarily to repay the loan, but just to have an addition, you know, they have a certain cost for the project. So, you know, do they have other sources of funding, fundraising, you know, other loans or what have
you? Yeah, again, this has been a pretty new process for us. So we've had taken that on a case by case basis. And in all cases, we've looked at that, and again, for rail, we've been more aggressive in our loans for rail because that has been a priority of the board. So again, the Twilla County one, this is the full cost of the expansion. The Iron County one, again, was about 75%. So they are bringing some of their own money to the table for these projects.
But when the company does have other revenue sources, it gives us an assurance that the taxpayer is protected in this case.
Sorry, just one more. You just said that there's these loans subsidize the overall cost, or is this the $2.4 million is the cost of the project into it?
The $2.4 is the entire cost.
Okay.
The $5 million is not the entire cost for Iron County.
Okay.
Is that everything you had about
Savage? That is everything for Savage.
Would you care to comment for us? Would you mind telling us your name and your position? Thank you for being here today.
Is this on? All right. My name is Andy Perucci. I'm with Savage. Do their government affairs for them. We're really excited about these projects. They're going to be force multipliers with when it comes to logistics and supply chains for rural Utah. To the question about whether or not, you know, these projects would have happened if not for this, I can tell you that the Tooele one would not have happened on the timeline without this loan. It's something we want to do. In fact, Mayor Wynn of Tooele City is coming out to see our operation next week because they're really excited about it. We've had to turn away business because of we're at capacity, but it was just not in our capital plan on the timeline that we've been able to do it. And so this is going to be a force multiplier for us, helping us to move it up on the timeline and start driving more product through there as soon as we can get it built. We're chomping at the bits to get both of these finished and start moving product through. We're already having customer meetings. And so we appreciate the support. We appreciate the Inland Port and helping to amplify these kinds of projects. When it comes to rail, it's a unique product because we don't own the materials going on our tracks. We don't own the materials that we're handling. So because of that, we don't pay a ton in taxes. And so the traditional economic development tools that are used by every state to help kind of drive economic growth is not really work. That's why this program is really unique and helps the industry in a lot of cool ways. We appreciate your support. We've also got our treasurer and a couple of other leaders from the company online. I don't know if either of any of them wanted to say anything.
They're certainly welcome to if they would like to.
Sounds like maybe not.
Okay. Any questions from board members for Mr. Perucci?
That's right. Okay. So are we considering both locations, right?
Yeah, hold on. I'm not ready for a motion yet, but I think we'll make two separate motions if that's,
okay.
If that's agreeable to the board. We could handle either way, but I think two separate motions so we can talk about the amount of money in each case is probably correct.
Did you want to wait to the end to make the
motions? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just so we can get Dan, or sorry. Yeah, Dan sworn in. Okay. Let's move on to Spanish Fork then.
Great.
Also, just to clarify, for those that are online, it seems that there's no audio option.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
For them to speak.
Can they raise their hands?
Larry would have to promote them to.
Okay. Okay, cool. I don't know if any of the other applicants will face that same issue, but okay. I know my team was just messaging me about that.
Are they okay still?
We're good. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Mike Miller.
This is Mike Miller, Senior Vice President, Business Development for Savage. Just wanted to express our gratitude for the committee to consider these loans. I think Andy did a great job representing, you know, what they'll be used for and how the benefit. But these are two great assets that will greatly benefit the communities and the areas they serve and ultimately take trucks off the road and puts the volume where it needs to be delivered to market. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Okay, let's hear about Spanish Fork.
Great, I'll move on. The next two loans are a little bit different. So again, usually we are going to be focusing these funds on rail infrastructure type of projects. These next two are a little bit different. The legislature funded about $65 million in AIB funds for loans. We gave the $10 million to BZI last year. Savage had another about $7.5 million. So we've got some capacity right now and we ran into a couple issues with timing of funds and the ability to get funds, as quickly as was necessary in a couple of our project areas. So for both Spanish Fork City and Zenith, we're looking at short-term loans. So again, kind of talking to some of the questions that have been asked of why these applicants, while they're not doing rail, specifically with these funds, they are project areas. They're inside project areas and, they just needed a kind of a bridge loan type of deal of 12 months or less to get them, keep the project area moving and enable us to get that, the tax property taxes growing and that incremental flowing so that we can have a successful project area. So, again, we've had other applicants that have wanted 10 or 15 year loans, for some of this public infrastructure that we have turned away, because they just needed this very short bridge loan. And they're both going to be, repaying these loans with, bond proceeds that they're looking to bond later this year. We felt it was a safe investment and a good investment to ensure that we could get these projects going. So, for Spanish Fork City, they've asked for $10 million, with a maximum of 1 year. a 3.47% interest rate, again, based on the one-year bond rate. The use of funds would be $3 million for a regional sewer lift station, $2 million for easements and materials for some power lines, and $4 million for land right-of-way acquisition for the road. So, again, the project area has about $60 million in public infrastructure that's needed. And some of these first steps, especially this land right-of-way acquisition, is kind of crucial to get going. And we want to make sure that we provide those funds, for that. The repayment source, again, we're looking to do a tax differential bond of $50 to $70 million to a public infrastructure district. That public infrastructure district has not been created yet. It's one that is going to be sponsored by the Inland Port Authority, however. And again, collateral will be from the, differential from the project area. Just one note on this public infrastructure district. So, the Tooele Valley loan to Zenith is very similar. What we did then, because we are the sponsoring entity, we, helped create those governing documents. One thing we put in the governing documents is that the first thing the money has to go to is repayment of any loans from the state of Utah. So
the bond proceeds.
Thank you for clarifying. So the bond proceeds, the first thing they will do is go to repay any outstanding loans. So we put that again in the Tooele Valley governing documents. We'll put something similar in the Spanish Fork, public infrastructure district governing documents, to make sure that those bond proceeds are being used as promised to repay these bonds. And again, going through your questions, Mr. Chair, this is a municipality that we're working directly with is how we chose them. And again, they, requested a very short term, loan.
I assume no other municipalities are the first.
That is correct. That is correct.
Maybe Cedar City would one day, but probably not.
Yeah. Again, if we had the ability to get the bond done, and the public infrastructure district created and the bond proceeds in earlier, it would have eliminated the need for this bond. So, for this loan. Again, they're a high credit, applicant. They have bonded recently, AA minus bonds. I can speak to their financials a little more freely since they are a government. They have 178 million in assets and 56 million in revenues last year. The bond proceeds are again what are going to be used, but the city itself has the ability to repay this loan if necessary. High confidence in the city staff, which we have several of them online. Seth Perrin, city manager, Dave Anderson, economic development director, and Jordan Hales, the finance director. I know are there. If I missed anyone, I apologize. We're looking to get this bond issued, this year still. Again, the public infrastructure district will be presented to our board, in a couple weeks. And we plan on having that approved by the board in May. And then we can start the bonding process immediately after that. Again, this money will be used within a project area, so we can use the differential as collateral. And I know this is, or at least has the ability to happen with other municipalities. If they don't repay the state can hold back some of the taxes from the tax commission. So I do think there's some recourse, additional there, although we don't have any intent of having to use that. Impact on the community. We are, the project area is a 2,680-acre industrial park with approximately 10 million square feet in new industrial facilities that are being planned. We have six or seven of the biggest developers in the state that have property down there that are planning on developing this area. So it's a really good opportunity. It's going to have significant economic impact on the area, and will be a really good project. Job impact, job creation will be significant. Again, 10 million square feet, depending on, you know, what gets in there is going to depend a lot on those jobs. So we do expect significant job creation from this project area. Again, no ownership rights, on these loans, but the funds will be used to jumpstart infrastructure development, which will enable the tax differential to start and really get going quickly. This loan, there was not really another way for the city to get this loan, this short-term loan for what they needed. We would have had to wait to continue development. It would have pushed us back another year, to get some of these right-of-ways purchased, and acquired. And so really speeding up the development of the area. How does Sloan contribute to sustainability? Again, one of the nice benefits of an inland port project area is it allows us to coordinate development, to recruit high quality companies to the project area, and to incentivize those companies that are going to be, again, providing significant capital expenditures in the area. They're going to create high quality jobs. We can also emphasize those that are doing so on rail and getting trucks off the road. According to city staff, there's no significant crime issues related in the area. There are no economic ties or other conflicts of interest between Spanish Fork staff and any member of the Inland Port Authority board or staff. Again, the environmental review that we did, again, this is a non-attainment area in terms of air quality. There are some wetlands in the area as well, which will be addressed through differential as well. We do have, again, those members from the city. They're available for questions or happy to take any questions from the board.
I'd like to jump in with one question or just ask if you would explain. You've already explained it for me, and Kurt could explain it probably better than any of us, but would you just reiterate why the one-year interest rate is higher than the 10-year interest rate?
Yeah, so I'm not an economist. My executive director to my left is the expert, but I do like to nerd out on some economics stuff. So we have an unusual situation right now in the market with an inverted yield curve where short-term interest rates are actually higher than long-term interest rates. Again, that is very unusual. And in the past, it's always been a leading predictor of a recession, which, again, if you've heard about soft landings or anything like that, that's kind of what the Fed has been trying to do. And so anyway, again, because of the volatility in those interest rate and in the markets, we have seen the short-term interest rates be higher than long-term. Again, that's probably not typical, but that's the state of things right now.
Okay, thank you.
Ask a question.
Sure, Mr. Sloth.
So with regards to both this project as well as the Savage project that we talked about earlier, one of the greatest public benefits you mentioned is that we're keeping trucks off the road. And obviously that helps us in terms of how many roads we have to build. And, you know, there's environmental impacts of having, you know, burning tires going down the road all the time. Like there really is a lot of pollution that's going on. Have you guys done any sort of analysis to try and quantify how many trucks might be saved from these projects? Is that something that is estimable or have you guys done that work?
Yeah, we have definitely done it. We're tracking it for the BCI facility that was funded through an AIB loan. I think seen if you have, I want to say it's 400 or 500 trucks. We just have 500 trucks that have been taken off the road just through BCI alone.
That's 500 in 1 year.
That's since our – so they opened up that facility in, I think, June or July of last year. So since that facility opened. So okay. We're about 9 or 10 months in there. Okay. I think it's maybe in the fall when it was open. So yeah, we are measuring that. Phil Hoskins from Savage, I'm going to allow him to talk because he's got his hand up.
Phil, please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. I thought I might jump in here to help respond to that question, if that's okay.
Sure.
You can hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, perfect. So for each rail car that we're able to bring in or ship out from the facility, that is anywhere from, you know, call it 3 to 4 truckloads that we're able to eliminate from the roads. And so, you know, we're looking at, upwards of 1,000 rail cars in our first year at Cedar City. And we believe, you know, by year, 3, maybe 4, we'll be in the 2,000 range. So if you just did easy math and said, you know, a 3-to-1 ratio, then, you know, first year, we're eliminating 3,000 truckloads, and by year, you know, five, we're upwards of six or potentially as many as 4,000 to 8,000 truckloads a year that we would be eliminating, just in our facility alone. And that's true for anyone that's bringing in rail or shipping out rail.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Any other questions for board members?
I have one more follow-up maybe to that question. But with that, we're running most of these engines, I assume, with diesel engines. Is that still comparable? Like an offset, we have two or three diesels at the front. I don't know. I don't do a lot of train stuff. But does that maybe offset when you've got hundreds of trucks coming off the road as a result?
I would defer to Phil if he wants to answer this, or anyone from Savage. The numbers we've heard from industry are anything from like 150 to the Rail Association to 300 from Union Pacific. So, you know, one train can take that many trucks off the road. But I would defer to Phil if he's got better numbers than what I've got.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Ben. And then I think just from an emissions standpoint, rail is, and I'm going to get the numbers a little bit off here, but directionally it'll be correct. It's 75% less emissions than the equivalent, trucks that it would take to haul that, those products. And for each, for each ton that a railroad is handling, there are over 400 miles that can travel. So, it's substantial as far as the environmental benefits that rail has relative to just using trucks alone.
Thank you.
Okay. I think that's everything from board members for now. So representatives from Spanish Fork, would you like to make any comments? Ben, if you'll tell us their names if we promote anybody.
Yep, we've got Dave Anderson, Economic Development Director.
Mr. Anderson, please proceed.
Just a simple thank you to Mr. Bies and his team. We appreciate their help as we try to get this project off the ground.
Ben, you mentioned how soon you expect they would be able to get a bond out. Would you just remind me what that number was, what that amount of time was?
Yeah, so we're looking to approve the Public Infrastructure District in our May board meeting. Okay. After that, once it's created, it's about a 90-day process typically. Again, it depends a lot on the bond market and how much due diligence is occurring. That's a pretty typical 90 to 120 days to get these bonds out.
And Kurt, you don't see any impediments with a double A minus bond history and being able to get those bonds out quickly?
Well, it wouldn't be for their double A minus. I mean, PIDs are always tricky, right? Because you're basically getting bond proceeds based on expected economic development. And nobody necessarily loves that. So the rates on that are regardless of your credit, they're going to be a little bit more expensive.
And these would be unrated bonds. So again, we're not using, Spanish Fork's credit necessarily for the bonds, not necessarily. We're not using them at all. Yeah, we're using the tax differential revenue rather than the credit of Spanish Fork for those bonds.
All right. Got it.
All right. Any other comments or questions for Spanish Fork? Okay.
Great.
Let's move on to Zenith.
I'll move on to the last one. Zenith Bollinger, again, the very similar type of loan to Spanish Fork. They've asked for $4.875 million for 1 year. Again, at a 3.47% interest rate. Use of funds, installation of a water system, tank, pump station, well water system, wastewater treatment system, roads, and power plant. Kind of all the infrastructure that needs to be done. They're already spending significant money in this project area. There's put $300,000 into a well digging that was going on a couple weeks ago that we've got a picture of some work being done. So they're really dedicated to this area. They're spending a lot of their own money right now already. And in trying to get kind of speaking to why we're doing this loan, when they tried to go to a bank and say, we've got this income source lined up, which is again, the Public Infrastructure District and bonds, that's again, not a world that a normal commercial banker has a lot of expertise with. And they're having a really hard time getting, again, this type of bridge loan. And not giving this loan would have really pushed back the development, of this project area. So, they are the owner of the land in the project area. They're doing all the initial development. So, we really need to keep them going. One unique thing about a public infrastructure district, it allows them to be a taxing entity. In Spanish Fork, we don't intend to levy any tax. Zenith Bollinger is planning on doing that, because they're the property owners. What they're doing is they're assessing a tax on themselves. And that's going to help them raise more money in that bond, which they will use to put in the public infrastructure. So it's really a way that we're getting public infrastructure, through money from Zenith Bollinger. And it's, in that way, a savings to the public entities, where they don't have to come up with those funds for all the public infrastructure themselves, actually paying for some of the public infrastructure from their own pocket, through that mechanism. So, they have also agreed to put up the 242 acres that comprise the project area and the public infrastructure district as collateral to this loan. Again, we did put in the governing documents that bond proceeds would be used to repay the loan.
First priority.
And we had the differential. So we're kind of covered in multiple ways on this loan. When we did our due diligence on Zenith, we looked for Dun & Bradstreet report. We couldn't find one. We did look at their banking relationship, as we do with all our loan applicants, and found that they've been with Wells Fargo since 2018. Again, these are experienced developers. They've been around for a long time developing. They've done many projects. Their financial statements again showed a very strong financial statement. I just got a message from one of the partners, Matt Smock, who's online and available for any questions, that they're selling some of their assets, some of their apartments right now, which is going to give them again more capital. So we feel that these are, although they don't have the sort of capital like a Savage does or a Spanish Fork City, because of their strong financial statement, the collateral they've pledged, we feel like this is a very safe and secure loan, just like the other ones. So, the bond proceeds, I've talked with the underwriter that's working on those bonds, got assurance that yes, they are doing these, this is an acceptable use of bond proceeds. So, we do feel like this is a very safe loan as well.
Mr. Slott?
Yeah. Can you remind me, so who's issuing the bonds? Is this Twill City or Twill County, or who's issuing the bonds?
So the bonds will be going through the public infrastructure district.
Okay. So these are bid bonds.
They are. Yeah. So
okay. All right.
So it's called the TV Public Infrastructure District.
Okay.
It was created last month, by our board, and in the board meeting approved, that creation of that PID. So they're working on the underwriting process right now. We do have the collateral. We have the 242 acres of land. We think that is, at least double, if not triple, covering the amount of the loan, that they've requested. This does have a significant public impact. This is an industrial park, that's being planned with approximately 2.4 million square feet of new industrial facilities, lots of rail served in there, and it will have, again, significant impact on job creation. Again, no ownership interest from the port. However, this will help ensure that we get the tax increment, tax differential started, and going as soon as possible. Finally, the creation of the project area, again, allows us to coordinate development of the area, get high quality companies and tenants, rail served industrial in the area, combined with the transloading options, brought by Savage, I think makes this a really good, area for those types of companies that are looking for rail served or want to get their product on a rail. Again, helping to stem the flow of commuters between Tooele County and Salt Lake City. no significant crime issues in the area. And kind of address the environmental issues. Again, this is a non-attainment area, according to air quality standards, and this is the project area with some wetlands that will be having some differential go towards protecting those and enhancing those areas. I do have Matt Smock online if you have any questions for him.
Maybe a quick question for you first, Ben. So how confident are you in the value of the 242 acres of land should the differential fall apart completely?
Yeah.
That alone as collateral matching the amount that we would be recommending.
Yeah. So at a pretty modest value, we covered it at 2x. Okay. Even if you look at the assessed value from the Tooele County Assessor, I think it's about 2x the value of the loan. Again, assessed values are usually under market value. So very confident. This is a really good spot. It's right off of I-80. So it's a really ideal spot for this type of operation. Mark Horn from Zenith is also online. Apologize for missing him earlier.
Would the contract, should we recommend this loan on the board or approve it later, would the contract stipulate that 240 acres are part of the collateral and that we would have first right to those to that property?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Any other questions from board members?
Yeah, quick question. On this one, this project, I know there's a lot of angst on the environmental concerns. So just wondering what the company's doing to kind of address those concerns from the from you know people and out in the public.
Okay, that's a question for Matt.
Yeah, Matt, are you able to address that? Certainly from the inland port side. Again, we do have our wetlands mitigation policy. We require some of the tax differential that's generated to go towards those wetlands. But Matt, anything you want to add on that?
Yeah, we did a wetland mitigation or basically a wetland delineation study. We have that available for everybody to view. And really what it did is surmise that the wetland that is on the south side of the road that'll cut across the project is actually pretty small. And so we're planning on setting aside some money to the wetland bank for the crossing of the wetland, which is under half an acre. It's really what we're looking to is funds to be able to build the road across of it, but also preserve the wetlands in that area, which is less than half an acre.
Is there any kind of a ratio of acres used to acres restored or mitigated that we use that kind of standard there?
Yeah, it's usually 1-to-1. Okay. So we'd have, I think it is the, I'm trying to think of the name of the bank that we'd have to go 1-to-1 in, but we received a notice today that says here's the assigned wetland bank that you would have to go 1-to-1 over into. And I think it is just in the Willard area, but I would have to confirm that.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I'll just add as well, Mr. Royal, that's only a question only a Tooele County resident could ask. But I would just add to that as well. And this is not a critique of the article because I think, it was a very, very well intended article, but there were some things that we felt like were not accurately represented. One of which is we are staying within the existing zoning. So that land had already been rezoned prior to the inland port ever coming in. We have to stay within that regulatory framework. We're not going to be going outside of that. I think that was a little bit misrepresented that, you know, all this stuff's coming in when one of the homeowners that had given their comments in that article, I had talked with him directly. He had acknowledged he knew what the zoning was before he bought the house. And there are protections against what he had talked about and some of the things that he had talked about. I won't go into that. But I think it's also been explained in terms of what we're doing with the wetlands policy, not just 1-to-1, but there'll also be money coming back from this project, from some of the tax increment that will be reinvested back into the wetlands as well. And so we feel like we've got an important environmental stewardship. And so we take that very, very seriously. And we're going to be working with local officials and with all the regulatory framework. We cannot, would not go outside of that framework. So.
Mr. Chair, can I just add, I neglected to mention your last question. Are there any economic ties or conflicts of interest between this applicant, any member of the board or staff there or not?
Okay. Okay. I believe that.
Yes. I do have one question. So earlier when you're describing the public benefit, you mentioned that this may help commute keep commuters off the road between Tooele and Salt Lake. I'm trying to understand how this project helps with the commuter traffic that goes from Tooele to Salt Lake.
We think there can be a significant number of new jobs created in Tooele County through our port project areas that, you know, people are, you know, these type of jobs are maybe not as available in Tooele County as they are in Salt Lake County. So getting more of these type of jobs in Tooele County, we think can do that.
So assuming current residents take those jobs.
Right.
Running from Salt Lake.
Right. And Director Hart just whispered something in my ear, which I was thinking 70%, he thinks it's 75%, but somewhere in that range of Tooele County residents are traveling to Salt Lake for their job right now. So the more.
I'm one of them.
Same here. Two here. So.
And to add to that question, so I work with the governor's office, economic opportunity, business recruitment. And so this does present an opportunity for us to recruit new businesses to those types of project areas in the hopes that not only, of course, benefits to the state, but also benefits to the community. As we said, the leakage rate, reducing the number of people who have to leave Tooele County or any county where a project area is found to go to a larger area to work. So that's, you know, I wouldn't say it's one of our primary goals, but we definitely love to see that happen.
All right. If you have any other questions, we can always take those later, but let's go on to our first agenda item then, back to where we were. So let's go into the swearing in of Mr. Daniel Royal. And so Carol, you are in the Port Authority staff member and a notary public. Would you please administer the oath to Daniel and please proceed?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Daniel, can you stand, please?
Yeah.
Repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Daniel Royal.
Do solemnly swear. That I will support.
Obey and defend.
The Constitution of the United States. And of the state of Utah. And I will discharge the duties. Of my office with fidelity. Thank you.
Happy to have you on the board, Daniel.
Thank you very much.
Happy to be here. You may know, but Daniel is the Director of Corporate Growth and Business Development for Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity, and he's a key player in the economic growth of the state. So he's going to bring an important perspective to this committee's work, and we're pleased to have his expertise. Okay, I would now entertain a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting, which was April
25, 2023. So
moved. Okay, we have a second.
I second.
Seconded by Mr. Ellis. Take a vote on that then. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We that's unanimous. Any, just to be safe, any noes? Okay, that does pass unanimously. Okay, now I would like to take motions on the recommendations for the loans. I'd like to just reiterate what our statute says so it's clear what we're doing. I believe you all know this already, but it says the loan committee may, you had this up on your slide, the loan committee may recommend for board approval an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port Fund to a borrower for an infrastructure project undertaken by the borrower. If this committee recommends an infrastructure loan, we shall recommend the terms of an infrastructure loan in accordance with Section 63A3404. And one of the terms in 63A3-404 is that it can't be higher than 0.5% higher than what the state is able to get on its bonding. So, do you have some language to help us proceed? Okay. Would anybody like to make the first motion? And Duncan, I believe you wanted to make sure that we had a resolution on the public benefit on that. So, would you be willing to make the first motion?
Okay.
So gotta word this. So I like just move the.
There's some language up on, on the screen if you'd like to use that, but and then I guess you would add your the resolution on public benefit as you see fit.
And I guess and back to this one. So this is going to benefit the Tooele Valley project area. And what's the second one?
20 wells.
20 wells. Okay.
Both of which are in Tooele County.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I move that the loan approval committee recommends that the Utah Inland Port Authority approve an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port Authority Revolving Loan Fund of $2.4 million to Savage Transload Network, with terms of the loan being 10 years at 3.04% interest rate payable and 10 annual payments. Additionally, the loan approval committee has determined that this project benefits project areas within Tooele County.
Okay. That motion is in order. Do we have anybody who can second that motion?
I'll second it.
Mr. Royal, thank you. Okay, I'm told that we need to do a roll call vote on that. So I'm going to just go one by one on here, and I'll just start with Mr. Royal.
Yes.
Mr. Evans.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mr. Slaw.
Yes.
And I vote aye as well. So that vote is unanimous. Okay, next request is Savage Transit Network for Iron Springs in Cedar City. Is there anybody who would like to volunteer to make this particular motion or whatever motion you feel appropriate?
I would move that we'd approve the loan to Savage Transload Network in the amount of $5 million, term being 10 years, 3.4% interest rate.
Okay. Any discussion or additions to that motion?
Mr. Chair, can I just clarify that interest rate of 3.04? I'm not sure.
Is that
what I say?
I think that's what he said.
I thought he said 3.4.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Yes.
All right. Okay. If everybody's ready, then we'll put it up for a vote. We have a second on that.
I'll second that motion.
Thank you. Mr. Royal?
Yes.
Mr. Evans?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Slav?
Yes.
And I vote aye. Spanish Fork City. We have a template up there that could be used. Would anybody like to make that motion?
I'll do it. Okay. I move that the inland, as a member of, I move that the Loan Approval Committee recommends that the Inland Port Authority approve an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port Authority Revolving Loan Fund of $10 million. To the Spanish Fork City, with terms of the loan being 1 year at 3.47% interest rate payable in 1 year.
Okay. And again, the contract would stipulate about the bond proceeds being used to repay and we have first right on those bonds. Okay, do we have a second on that?
I second that.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Put up for a vote, Mr. Royal?
Yes.
Mr. Evans?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Slaw?
Yes.
And I vote aye. Okay, Zenith Bollander, our final one. Mr. Roy, would you be willing to make this motion?
Sure. All right, proposed motion. The Loan Approval Committee recommends that the Utah Inland Port Authority approve an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port Authority Revolving Loan Fund of $4.875 million to Zenith Bollander with terms of the loan being 1 year at 3.47% interest rate payable in 1 year. I so move.
Thank you. And again, we would have first right on those bonds, and hopefully that will go in the contract that Vision Finance puts forward as part of this. So anybody want to second that motion?
I second.
Okay. We'll put it up for a vote. Mr. Royal?
Yes.
Mr. Evans?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Slaw?
Yes.
And I vote aye. So it's unanimous. So I would just to clarify, we have recommended to the full Inland Port Authority Board about $22.3 million in loans. Last year was 10 million with our economic PCI. So about 32 million so far have been recommended at this point out of the 60 or 65 that is available. Just for perspective, that's not even what a certain new BYU basketball coach signed a contract for the next 7 years. So, but anyway, still significant money, and we want to put that money to work, but we also want to protect the taxpayers and make sure that they get this return on their investments. So, thank you, board members, for your diligence, and thank you, staff, for answering all the questions and providing the information we need. And unless there's anything else, I'd entertain another motion to adjourn.
I'll do that motion. Motion that we adjourn.
Okay. I'm not sure that needs a second, but
I'll second that.
Put it forward. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for all that extra. Thank you. Yeah. You know, you gave to us.
Happy. Yeah.